Hello, my name is Brennan.
And my name is Jesse.
And we've been brothers our whole lives.
We also host a podcast called Dad, I Have to Pee.
Every Friday, we discuss parenting and punk rock with a special guest.
We also answer your listener questions and impart our questionable wisdom.
Available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all other places.
We're also on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Dad, I Have to Pee.
True Consequences is a true crime and mystery podcast with stories based in New Mexico and the American Desert Southwest. I'm your host, Eric Carter Bondeen.
I need to thank my sponsors for today, the Downtown Growers Market. You can access local food at the Downtown Growers Market using your EBT or SNAP benefits. And the best part about that, they're going to double up your food bucks, which means you're going to get to spend half the money and get twice as much amazing local food. So go check them out. They are every Saturday from 8 to noon at Robinson Park, 8th and Central. Thank you so much to the Downtown Growers Market for sponsoring today's show.
On September 15th, 2017, a young man was found dead in the arroyo near the intersections of Richmond and Candelaria in Albuquerque, New Mexico. This person was the third in a series of seemingly similar killings that happened in Albuquerque that year. Police told the media in a press conference that all three men were living transient lifestyles. They were all stabbed and were all staged in the same manner. Was there a spree killer on the loose in Albuquerque in the fall of 2017? Or were these three random killings? I'm Eric Carter Lundeen, and this is True Consequences. Eric Hicks was a 33-year-old man. His mom told me that he was her firstborn son. She had him when she was only 16 years old. He was said to have been very funny and the type of person who would go out of his way to help anyone who was sad or needed help. His mom told me that he had a huge heart and he would befriend kids who were not popular or didn't have many friends. Eric struggled with drug addiction for a long time, and this would lead the media to go out of its way to highlight this struggle after his death. Listen now to his mom as she tells me about her son and what he meant to her. So tell me about your son. Tell me about what he meant to you and what you remember about him.
Okay, I remember the day he was born. He was my firstborn son, and I was only 16. So we kind of grew up together, but he was my son and I was his mother. And no matter how much we got into together as he got older, that line was never really crossed. You know, he always knew. He could be a butt sometimes, but he always knew that I was the mom and he was the son. And sometimes it got crossed a little bit, but not really. He was funny. He was so funny. And he was athletic and he was artistic. He could draw. He had a plaque up in the high school for long jump. He was tall and lanky, so he had a long jump. And he was my best friend. He had a huge heart, which carried into his addiction. He couldn't see. He almost like an empath, I swear. He could cry if he saw you crying. He could feel bad to hear somebody's heartbreak, or, you know, he was like that. He was the one that always brought the dorky little kids home. Like, really. Really dorky little kids. He'd come, "Mom, can my friend Franklin come for lunch?" You know, a little pencil neck kid or a little fat kid named Charlie that he used to bring over. Just because he was popular in school, even in, like, grade school. But there was always kids that, you know, weren't that popular. Eric was just drawn to him and picked him up and brought him home and became friends with him. And he was just like that. And it's hard, even when he was in his drug addiction, before he died, and then one after he died, and all three were girls. When they found out I was his mom, told me stories about how he happened to come upon three different girls from three different areas of his life and times of his life, told me almost the same story. They came up, he just happened to, you know, come across them when they were in a really bad way. One girl's boyfriend was beating her up. and Eric jumped in, and the guy took off. Eric took care of her for the rest of the night. This one was after Eric was already on drugs, and one girl got abandoned by her boyfriend at a gas station, and she was dope sick, and it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and she had no money, and she had nowhere to go, and she was scared, and Eric just came walking up, just the same thing, you know, all of a sudden Eric just came walking up, and asked her what was wrong, and she told him what was going on, and he went in the gas station and bought her a bunch of food with his food stamps and stuff, and then came back out and told her that he could get her well, you know, that he had some shit. And I guess they went behind a building. They went down a little bit, and they went behind a building, and she thought Eric was going to expect, you know,
sex.
Yeah. Yeah. And so she got real nervous, and he was like, well, what's wrong? And she had made a comment, like, she doesn't do this or something, and he said, like, do what? And this is the girl telling me. This isn't, like, Eric. I mean, so I know it's true. Yeah. Plus, I had heard it before about Eric, and he said, no, I don't. Girl, did I say anything about, you know? He said, you're sick. I got... And I'll help you, you know. And that, you know, if Eric had one, you'd have half. You know, I mean, that's just how he was. And he did it even into his drug addiction. I mean, and he was funny. And he was always funny. But not knock-knock funny, you know. Funny like, you know, he would just have something like witty, like real quick witty and make you laugh. And then as he got older, I think he realized, and so he appreciated his own humor. And he realized what he had. I mean, he used it on purpose to make you happy. Sure. He had a huge heart. He just had a huge, huge heart. And man, he was just wonderful. He was like my best friend. He didn't mean to go the way he went.
Yeah, I think, you know, everybody has their struggles in their lives. And
that's why I don't like judging. Don't judge people.
Yeah, because you don't know their story, you don't know what they're dealing with, and just because their struggle looks different from yours doesn't mean that your struggle's any better than theirs is.
And just like everybody else, he didn't start out, you know, panhandling and stealing food and, you know, stealing from people he cared about.
Yeah.
He didn't start out that way. I mean, you know, he was a brother and a nephew and a son and a daddy. You know, he was just like everybody else. I mean, you know, things just got to him. And
yeah. Yeah, I talk about this all the time on my show, that really, like, there's no such thing as a throwaway person. It doesn't matter what anybody's circumstance is. Nobody deserves to die. You know, you're sitting here in front of me and obviously in pain, in emotional pain. You know, even though Eric had addiction struggles, he still had a lot of people who loved him and cared about him and didn't want this to happen to him. So
he didn't deserve it.
Nobody deserves it.
Right.
You know.
Right. You don't. Nobody deserves it.
Yeah. It doesn't matter what you're dealing with or what you're going
through. Even the one that did this to him doesn't deserve it to be done to him, I don't think.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah.
Maybe stay locked up.
Sure.
But not to be tricked. Like they did to Eric.
Yeah. So anything else you want to say about Eric before we get into what happened?
Just that he was beautiful inside and out. And he was, you know, what God gave me and his dad, nobody had the right to take away.
Yeah.
And he really was a great person. He was really a great person. He was funny. He was energetic. And, you know, Eric did not even drink or anything till way into his 20s. I mean, he just didn't. He wasn't a party person. He wasn't, you know. I mean, when it hit, and it took him quick, like in a matter of like 5 years, you know. He was really, he loved his ex-girlfriend, Ashley. He loved her to the moon and back, and he loved his kids, Darian and Noah. And then life, you know, kind of kicks your ass and things happen, and then you start falling and then you can't get up. But he was like really funny, like very special, very loving. He was just a good man. He was a really good man. If you would have known him, like everybody else, if you would have known him before this hit, you would have said, no way. You would never believe that Eric would fall into drugs.
Yeah.
You'd never believe it.
I have often said on this show that there are no throwaway people. And listening to Lisa tell me the story of how her son impacted her life is a strong reminder to all of us that no matter what struggle somebody is going through, they matter. The family members that get left behind in a tragedy like this often feel the brunt of the pain when they hear their family members being disparaged in the media. Lisa will never get back that relationship with her son that she loves and misses every day. He didn't deserve to die. And he didn't deserve to be treated poorly in death either.
Can we talk about the day Eric died? And I know you didn't really understand the whole story until later.
I still don't know the whole story. I still don't know the true story. All I know is one day me and Robert woke up, and it's about 10 o'clock in the morning, and the phone rang. Robert answered it, and he handed it to me, and it was a sheriff here in Santa Fe. I think it was either Gomez or Gonzalez. And he said, and I was on probation at the time, and misdemeanor probation, and he said, this is Sheriff Gomez or Gonzalez. And he said, I'm actually at your old place that your former residence, mm-hmm. which was, me and Robert had moved here August 5th. And this was September, I think it was the 16th. And I thought I was in trouble. And he said, I'm over here at your, realized I found out that you don't live here anymore. And so the manager told me Robert's phone number, because he didn't know where we had moved to, but he gave him Robert's phone number. And my first, am I in trouble? Oh, am I in trouble? Mm-hmm. I mean, I was like, oh, shit, you know. So he said, no, ma'am, you're not in trouble. You're not in trouble. I just need to talk to you. And then I thought, okay, this is like a setup or something, but I knew I didn't do anything wrong, you mm-hmm. know. So I knew it right then and there, and I put my hand over the phone, and I looked at Robert, and I said, something's wrong. Something's wrong. Here it is. Because I've always said, I'm going to get a call or knock at the door. And of course, this day I got both. I said, here we go. This is it. I know it is. So, I'm really bad with directions. So, I had to give him the phone to Robert so Robert could give him directions to get here. So, Robert sat outside on the porch and had the door open. And I was just kind of pacing back and forth. Like, oh, oh, God, I just know it. And so then I heard him say, Robert, Lisa, he's here. So I walked out of the porch, and he got out of his car. He was just pulling up. The sheriff, he got out of his car, and he took his hat off. And that's when I knew that. I knew it was my son, Eric. Is it? I just remember saying, is it? Because I couldn't even say Eric's name. Is it? And he said, do you have a son name? And at the same time, we said, Eric Hicks. And he said, yes, ma'am, I'm very sorry. And I said, is he, you know? And he said, yes, he's been found deceased. So I don't remember a whole lot after that. I remember just folding on the porch and Robert and the sheriff sitting me down on the chair and then him and Robert talking. And I just remember rocking back and forth and crying and just, oh, God, this is it. This really happened. He's really gone right now. He's really gone. And so I remember him giving Robert a car. Well, I asked him what happened. How did it happen? What happened? He said, I don't know. I'm from Santa Fe. I was given, like, the duty to just come and inform you, notify you. And then that's when he gave me a card for the detective in Albuquerque. And he said, call her and she could tell you. You know what happened, and so I said, okay. And I don't remember him leaving. I don't remember saying goodbye to him. I don't remember coming back in the house. I just remember me and Robert thinking, oh, please just let it be an OD. Just, he did a big old shot of heroin, and he just folded. You know, he just mm-hmm. nodded out and just didn't wake up. Please, please, please. And then Robert kept saying, well, call. And I couldn't. I couldn't even wrap my mind around what was happening. So it took me a minute, but then while I was sitting there waiting, I was thinking to myself, you know, they wouldn't have a detective for a freaking OD, you know? Mm-hmm. But I said, no, this is going to be bad, I already know. This is going to be real bad. So I called her, and she answered right away. I said, my name is, you know, Lisa, and I'm calling for my son, Eric Hicks, and I'm calling for Detective Jody. And she said, hi, Lisa, this is Jody. And I said, hi, and she just, you know, let me just start by saying that I'm sorry. I'm so very sorry. And I just said, can you just tell me how it happened? And so many things, and I think everybody knows this, in different situations, so many things go through your brain at once. Like, so many things go through your brain at once. And I thought, okay, I already know it's not an OD. Well, please, maybe he just got shot. Like, maybe they just shot him and he just, like fell out, just boom, like that. Please, please don't let it be like they stabbed him. Or
he suffered.
Yeah, or yeah. He suffered. And so, when I asked her, she said he had been stabbed. And he suffered. And that was it. He was stabbed 3 times, and then they left him there in the arroyo, and that was it. And then we didn't know anything until we found out who had done it and who was involved and what had happened and the story. And then all of a sudden I get like 3 different stories, 4 different stories, and I don't know who's telling the truth. And so I'm sitting here like grieving the hell out of my son, and I can't even like tell him, don't worry, baby, we'll get him, or, you know, because we don't even know who did it. And then we found out it was even worse. And then, like, directly after that, all of a sudden, you get bombarded with all these calls. It's like, how does everybody know? As soon as I talk to the detective, you know what I mean? Everybody starts calling, and you're talking about, like, funeral arrangements and, like, medical examiners and forensics and all this shit that, like, you're like, oh, my God, with my son in the middle, you know, like, his name mixed up with all that. And it's like, whoa. I remember his girlfriend calling, and then his ex-girlfriend calling, and his dad is calling from Nashville talking about whatever you want, babe, whatever you want, you know. And I wanted to get him cremated because I thought, in my mind, he had already been in the dark and in the dirt and all that for long enough, and I wanted him to be with me, so wherever I was, so I have him in the bedroom with me. But, and then Scott had bought, he bought 2 big urns, and then he bought 3 little ones. You know, so, I mean, it's like, everything's just a blur.
Sure.
It's just terrible. And then it just got worse from there.
Can we talk about what you found out later from what you know that happened?
Okay, so, I just stayed, and you know, I just want to say that the last thing I said to Detective Jody, for the very first time I talked to her, this conversation, when she would tell me what happened, we were saying goodbye and almost hanging up, and I said to Detective Jody, and she said yes, and I said, will you please don't let him be forgotten. Like, please don't forget about him. And she said, oh no, I have his files right here, I'm looking at his picture on my desk, and so I said, okay, you know, and so I trusted that, you know. So we just went, time, you know, went by, and we were staying in touch, and she would call me and say, one time she called me and said, or she texted me and said, did Eric have any jewelry? And Eric didn't wear jewelry. He got his eyebrow pierced years ago and took that shit out right away. He didn't like it. He had a diamond in his ear. Every once in a while, somebody would give him a diamond, and he'd put it in, and then he'd cluck it for some dope or something, you know. But he wasn't like rings, bracelets, necklaces. So I texted back, no, you know, he wasn't a big jewelry wearer. And then like that, you know, she texts me, and, you know, I text her back, and okay. So then all of a sudden one day she calls me and she says, okay, we got him, you know. And she had told me that 2 girls had said, told her, about what they knew, which was after she called me and said, okay, we got him, is when I found out what the girls had said and all that. And she just said, his name is Charles Ziegler. She said he's in jail actually right now. We got him on a probation violation. She said, but I'm going to have him held in jail long enough to where I can formally charge him with murder while he's already in, because if he gets out and he knows we've all been asking in his net, he'll bounce, you know. So I said, okay. So then she calls me and said, okay, he's been charged. Okay, so that's it. When this all first happened and I was getting all these calls, his girlfriend called me, Autumn. And I said, Autumn, what the hell happened? Like, what happened? I don't know. I said, well, you know, come on, what happened like that day? You guys woke up and take it from there. Well, she told me some guy named Texas. I said, do you have any idea who would do this to him? She said, well, Eric got us a motel room. And then we were getting high and this and that. Well, I started getting sick, so Eric went to go get more. And while he was gone, there was a knock on the door, and I answered it, and it was two people. And so they told me, well, we just saw Eric. Eric said for us to come here and wait, tell you to let us wait, and he'll be back in a minute. And then the next thing I remember her saying was, well, then it got to be, like, really late, and the sun was coming up, so I went to look for him. I went walking, you know, and she saw a bunch of, like a big old crowd and cops and all kinds. And she said, I just knew. So I went walking over there, and one of the cops, or some guy told him, some guy just got killed down there. There's some guy got murdered. And she said, I just knew. So she talked to some cop, and Eric didn't have a wallet or anything on him. I always managed to lose his identity. She told the cop, I think it might be my boyfriend. And so she told the cop what he looked like and his tattoos. And the cop went down and came back and said, yeah, that's him.
We're going to take a quick break. And we're back. According to news sources, it was believed that Eric had taken some drugs from a man who was known on the streets as Texas, or Solid. And that person was none other than Charles Ziegler. This information was given to police by Eric's girlfriend at the time. At the same time that all of this was happening, Eric's brother was in jail. And he just happened to turn on the TV that his dad had given to him, and as the news came on, he learned that his brother had been murdered by watching the news in his jail cell.
He said, I swear to God, Mama, I lay down on my bed and I put on my TV. And first thing I saw was the news saying, dead man found on Albuquerque bike trail has been identified as Eric Scott Hicks. That's how he found out about his brother. God. He said, I freaked. Okay, so then Eric started, you know, and everybody was questioning Autumn. And it was like, Autumn. And he's like, well, did you ask that? And I was like, I can't even think straight right now. You know what I mean? I don't know what questions to ask. I mean, I'm just like totally depending on the system, you know, to help me, right? And he said, well, did he have defensive wounds? Because my son, Eric Justin, knows about that kind of stuff, you know? And I said, I don't know, Justin. I didn't ask, you know? So anyway, so then it turned out that this was the guy Texas, when Detective Jody told me it was this guy named Texas. And then I said, well, like what? You know, and she's like, well, I'm gonna find out more and this and that. Okay, so then like not long after that I get a call that says, here's what happened. She said, the plan was, and this is almost like there's certain things you just don't forget word for word. Mm-hmm. I could swear this is word for word. Almost just about word for word. The plan was they were going to lure him into the arroyo, beat him up until he was unconscious, and then rob him. And my first thought, well, what the fuck are you going to rob from a street junkie? Mm-hmm. What the hell are you going to rob him? Okay? But then I went back to when Autumn told me what happened. I said, well, do you think somebody robbed him? Like they saw him coming out of the dope house or the dope motel or whatever, and they followed him and robbed him? And she said, no, because the dope was still in his pocket. So I said, well, then why would they kill him? She says, the detective, Jody, says, okay, well, they were going to rob him, and it went bad. And he got killed. Okay, so now I'm sitting here thinking that my poor son was lured into the arroyo, and they were surrounding him, and then I'm thinking, he realized that, oh my God, he can't get out of it, he's gonna fucking die, you know, like, did he think about me, or his brother, or his kids, or did he know that this time, you know, he had gotten beat up a few times out there, you know, I mean, it happens, did he know when he got there? And he realized, whatever, however they lured him, which is probably like, oh man, you want to do a shot or something. Did he get there and then get surrounded and realize that this was a setup and he was tricked. And did he know he was going to die? Or, you know what I mean? And then next thing I know, I get another story when I'm thinking that. Well, then James calls from the courts. He's like the advocate, like the victim's advocate. Yeah. So he calls me and he's telling me, you know, this and that, this and that. Okay, so they're going to get him on 5 charges. Murder, 1, like premeditated murder. Tampering with evidence, because apparently he, like, broke the knife and all that, in 3 parts and all that. Tampering with witnesses, because they had him on tape in the county jail in MDC telling people, if they ask you questions, don't tell them shit. Then they had these 2 girls and that said that he admitted, I just killed Eric, or I just left him for dead, or whatever. Okay, so, I mean, you can see how confusing this is. I mean, it's like, oh my God. Okay, so then, murder 1, tampering with evidence, tampering with witness, and 2 more. Okay, they had 5 charges. 5 charges. And I'll never forget the day James told me that, because I was in the bathtub and Robert brought me the phone and said, here, it's James. Now, they wouldn't give Robert any information. I was in the bathtub talking to James, and James said, 5 charges, 5 charges. Now, this is the court date in Albuquerque. If you can't make it, that's okay. You don't need to be there. It's just gonna... And he told me, I remember him specifically saying, the grand jury, they can take charges away if they don't think that it's worth, you know... Or they can...
add more.
Yeah, add more. Exactly. So I said, okay. And he said, if you show up, you know, I'll find you or whatever. If not, I'll call you. Robert came home from work, and first thing he said, James called, here's the phone. He said, because he couldn't give him any specifics, but he said, he just told me to tell you, we got him on all 5. And I was like, oh my God. Oh my God. All 5. Okay. Oh, vindication. Justice.
Yeah.
Justice for Eric. Okay. Yeah. So then, I don't even know how long it was later, I get a call one day, phone rings, I answer it, it's some woman, she says, I'm the DA, I'm the prosecutor. We're giving him a deal for second degree murder. I mean, right? I wanted a fate. I was like, I don't understand what you're saying, you know, like, I don't get it. What do you mean? You know, well, the 2 girls that gave their statements during the interview, you know, like, investigation... Well, they lawyered up, and so they're not going to be credible anymore. And I said, I don't get it. Like, didn't they go in and be interrogated? Don't they, like, get videoed, or, like, they write it down in their own words? I mean, I've watched enough fucking Law and Order to know that, you know what I mean? Like, okay, so, I mean, both of them, really? Both of them? Of course they want lawyers now. They're going to court for a murder trial, you know?
Yeah, and having a lawyer doesn't mean you're not credible.
Yeah, what is it? That's what I'm saying. Like, what do you mean? Because they're getting lawyers, they're not credible. I don't understand. Well, oh, and also, well, I can't, there's no evidence. I can't find a forensic, I can't find a hair. I can't find a drop of blood that doesn't remember, like, isn't Eric, you know. You mean to tell me that these junky-ass heroin motherfuckers pulled off the perfect fucking crime? Really? In an arroyo? Just like that. Just like that. Like, who killed JonBenet? I don't know. Who killed Eric? All these, we're going to go at forever? We don't know who did it, because... Not only did they admit it, not only do they have witnesses, not only were there other people involved, not only did they get caught on the fucking tape on, in from jail telling people, okay, not throwing the knife away, breaking it into 3 pieces, not the girls. Then this is, I find this in the report that you can find on the internet. Some guy told him, well, don't use a gun because it makes too much noise. Well, if you were just going to go beat him up, what the fuck are you being a gun for? I want to die of a broken heart from this, because my son is not getting justice. He's not getting justice. If this was that DA's son, oh my God, really? If this was a judge's son, really? Yeah. This would be happening right now? You're a DA and you're sitting here and another DA is telling you, oh, your son, well, we just can't find anything. And oh, there were 5 charges and we have proof, and the grand jury voted to go ahead and indict him on 5 charges because they had enough evidence. Oh, but now all of a sudden there's no evidence and you can only get him on second degree murder and he gets 8 fucking years, right? I mean, I felt sick. I told her, I'm going to be sick to my stomach. I have to go. And I hung up on her, and I never heard from anybody ever again. I never heard from anybody ever again. So Charles writes me a letter, you know, that says, okay, now, when Eric was already gone, and I was talking to Detective Jody, she was talking about they had the car in the forensics, okay? And she said we found blood in the car. And for some reason, I don't know why, it had already been like a couple few weeks, you know? But when she said we found blood in the car, I don't know why, but that shit hit me so hard. And I was like, oh my God, was it his? I mean, blood in the car, I don't know why that, it just, oh my God. And I was just like, oh my God, was it his? She said, I don't know, I haven't gotten it back from forensics yet. And I mean, this is not a nightmare. It's just one of those like, oh God. And I was just like, oh my God. Okay, well, when it came back, turned out it was this girl named Flo's blood. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, Flo is a girl that Eric was messing around with on the streets. You know, he had his girlfriend, Autumn. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, he had a street chick, you know. Mm-hmm. So apparently, the blood came back as Flo's. So it depends on which story you listen to. Detective Jody told me that earlier that day or something, Autumn and Flo came in contact and they got in a fight. They started throwing blows. Autumn picked up a rock and smashed her in the head with it. Okay? Flo in the head. Somewhere along the line, got the blood on her and then transferred it back to the car.
Okay.
So that's how Flo's blood got in the car, which was no big deal because Eric was still alive.
Sure.
The pain of losing Eric was only made worse by the fact that the DA decided to make a plea deal, which led to reduced charges and reduced sentencing. This caused more grief for Lisa and her family. And then to make matters worse, the accused killer, Charles Ziegler, reached out to Lisa by mail from prison. He claimed that he wanted to get the real story out to her. It's important to know that after the letter was written and sent to Lisa, Charles and his legal team asked the judge to overturn his sentence, and he claimed that he was innocent of all the charges. They even asked the court to do additional forensic testing, claiming that it would clear his name.
So, when Charles wrote me this letter, he said him and his friend were like under the bridge or in the Arroyo, I don't know, somewhere, so like in the bridge or something. And here comes Flo walking up, and she was like bloodied on her face, and her lip was already busted, and her eyes were already getting black, and her face was swollen. And she said Eric had raped her. Eric had forced himself on her and raped her. And she was all tore back. And he's like, please believe me, because she was really bloody. And, you know, and so she was really saying about, you know, I know everybody would say, but my son is not. Okay. Would never, ever, ever. Like, he probably couldn't even, I mean, and I'm talking my own son. Okay. Mm-hmm. He probably couldn't even, you know what I mean? Sure. Let alone force himself. I mean, it's just so obnoxiously ridiculous that I knew right then, as I was reading it, it was bullshit. So they went to look for him, Charles and this friend of his, and didn't say if she went with or whatever, but they found him, and only until recently did I see go further on the internet to see that there's somebody put him on the bridge, rest in peace, Eric, like, tagged it, you know, and then there was, and it even says there's two, pieces of board put into a cross where Eric's body was found. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's right where they found him. And they confronted him, and Charles says in the letter, we walked up to him and we were like, hey, Eric, what's going on? And he said, I don't know what he was doing, but he turned around and he whipped out a knife. But another story is that he stole a bunch of dope from a dealer, and he was told to watch his back. That's a quote,
right?
Watch your back. So if he was carrying a knife, it was to protect himself. You know what I mean? But Eric never, he just wasn't, he didn't have it. Have you ever like gotten in a fight and you just can't give it your all because you just can't do it? Mm-hmm. You just don't have it in you. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's Eric. I mean, if he was fighting for his life, maybe, but I don't think they just came up to him and were like, hey, Eric, you know, like what happened? Like Flo said, you know, and he just turned around and whipped out a knife and just started lashing out at them. And then that's what he said that he did. And then he was like, Eric, man, chill out. quote unquote, I mean, I can get you the letter, that he said, Eric, chill, bro, because this isn't going to fucking turn out good. Okay, if you keep, you know, and Eric just, you know, was like, going crazy with the knife. And all of a sudden, okay, his friend, Charles's friend, that was his left hand got cut. That Eric cut his left hand. And then Charles, you know, with his knife. So they were going at it. And then they noticed that Eric was bleeding. And they were like, come on, bro. Let me take you to the hospital. Let me take you to the hospital. And Eric was like, no, fuck you, man. You know what I mean? And so they were like, fine. And they left. And then somewhere along the line, Eric just folded and died. Which is just the most bullshit story I've ever heard in my life. Because even Eric, no, if you're bleeding profusely, they stabbed him 3 times.
Yeah.
Okay, if you're bleeding like that, you're automatically going to start feeling dizzy. I mean, you know what I mean? You're going to fight for your own life. Yeah, man. You know what I mean? And then what are you going to do? Take him to the hospital and admit that you stabbed him? I mean, come on. You know what I'm saying? It's all. So that's like 3-4 different stories.
Sure.
And then all I know is in the end, son of a bitch got 8 years. Nobody else got arrested. All the people that were involved didn't get arrested. And then the two other people... The two other ones that were killed, 3 of them within 4 months in the same area, okay? Homeless, drug addicts, and their bodies were positioned the same way. And the one cop on the internet, the one guy says, how your body is positioned, how they manipulate your body into a certain position, you know, to like make a statement or, you know what I mean? And all 3 of them. Right? And it just seems like if all 3 of them had the same, were all killed in the same area, yeah. All stabbed, and all positioned in the same way, then how come only Charles Ziegler is getting charged with my son's murder and not these other two? I mean, because isn't that how does that happen?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I never heard from the DA again. I never heard from Jody again. So from the very first phone call I ever talked to Jody, and I asked you not to let my son be forgotten. That's exactly what she did, I feel like. Mm. I feel like she let him be. And then in the new, everything's, he was a junkie and he was found in the Walmart with a needle hanging out of his arm, passed out. And he was caught, put in jail for stealing jerky and Pop-Tarts, you know? So you can't say anything about how he left 3 beautiful children or he was a son and a brother. That's all you got to say about him? Is that he was a junkie? Justice? Hell no. I'll bet you a judge's kid would get justice. I'll bet you that DA, when she called me, I'll bet you if her son was the exact same scenario. You think that DA's kid or that judge's kid or any lawyer's kid or anybody, a cop's kid, anybody in authority or above me, little peon-ass woman that just has a junkie son, you think any of them, 5 charges from the DA, from the grand jury, you think he would get none of them? And then second degree murder, 8 years. 8 years, he's going to be out in a minute.
It's not right.
And it makes me mad. It makes me angry. Because my son mattered, just like everybody else. My son was no better than anybody else's child. And I believe that there is a lot of unfairness.
Yeah.
I just believe it's unfair.
I know there's nothing that I can say or do to make it better for you.
Nobody can ever say when your child dies in the worst possible way, in the worst manner. The only thing you can hope for is justice.
Yeah.
It's the only thing you can hope for is to know that they died, but and they you know. You go through those stages, right? And I yell at Eric sometimes, you know, you stupid fucker. I told you to get off the drugs. I told you this was going to happen. I get mad at Eric, but he paid for what he did, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He paid for his own mistakes, and he paid for... But the person that did it doesn't pay anything. I mean, 8 years, you know, they're still getting high in prison.
Yeah.
And then he gets out, and he's just going to just be, you know, like, oh, yeah, I did 8 years.
Yeah, and he'll still have
a life ahead of him. And his children, or he'll get to have children. And then my son's funeral was at my daughter's funeral. Me and Robert lost our baby the day she was born, September 25th, 2006. And her funeral was the 29th, September 29th. You know, it took me almost 2 years to realize that Eric's funeral was on the same day. It took me over 2 years One day I walked in the bedroom and I said, Robert, do you realize that Eric and Melody's funeral was on the same day? It was also Eric's, the last son he had with Autumn, turned two, same day.
It was his birthday.
And Eric's funeral was his son Ethan's second birthday. And like, I'm going through all this pain, like, what did he ever do that was so bad? Like, it's so bad that he stole dope, if that's the reason. Okay, it's so bad that he stole dope. Well, what is it that you murdered him? I mean, right. Is that better? Or, you know what I mean? Like, what did I ever do to you? What did he ever do that bad? Beat him up unconscious and wrap him, supposedly. Do it. Break his legs. Break his arms and his legs.
Yeah.
You didn't have to kill him. Yeah. You didn't have to kill him, man. Did you have any idea as soon as you killed him and you watched him fall? And you walked away and left him there to die. Did you realize about what was going to happen from the time I got the knock on the door to tell me my son was murdered? Did you have any idea how much heartbreak you were going to cause? And then people like, the courts, they don't give a shit. Really? How do you get on 5 charges from the grand jury? And then it gets put down to second degree murder with all that evidence. No evidence. How do you not? No witnesses. How do you not? Oh my God. He was okay because he admitted.
Right.
See? That's why he got second degree.
Yeah, he got a plea deal.
Yeah. Why would you get a plea? I mean, how can that not be slap off? God, you're going, that's it. Boom. 30 years, bro. I mean, for all of it. What happened to the tampering with evidence?
Right.
With a knife? That's still a charge, right?
Yeah.
Just because you admitted to killing him doesn't mean that you still don't get charged for breaking the knife and right? I mean, shouldn't that stick still? Or tampering with witnesses, which you are on tape from the jail. You are on the county jail tape telling people, don't tell them shit, don't tell them shit.
All of that is provable. All that's provable, and it doesn't...
Yeah, but he can't be charged again, so for whatever reason, they didn't prove it. Or they didn't pursue it. And I don't understand. I mean, what? My son's such a piece of shit junkie, and the guy that killed him is such a better junkie that, you know what I mean? My son was sentenced to life forever, you know?
Yeah, he's gone.
I was sentenced to, like, dying of a heartbreak slowly every single day. And this guy gets out in 8 years, like, he's a better human being or what? Like, a better, like, he's worth more, or you go to jail for drugs more.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
For murder?
For distributing pot or whatever, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not right. There's so much wrong with our justice system, and I can tell you that...
Makes me sick.
At first, I want to say thank you for your bravery. I know this wasn't easy, and I know it was painful.
I told you... would be hard for me.
But I want you to know that now we will make sure that Eric is not forgotten. Okay? Thousands and thousands of people are going to hear his story. And we're going to use story...
He was my best friend.
His story, along with all the others that I've talked about, is going to help make change in the state. And everything that I do from now on is in honor of him. And of everybody that I've talked to, I won't let him be forgotten. I promise you.
Yeah, because he was... He meant something.
Yeah.
He was somebody's...
He was your world.
I was just going to say that. He was somebody's world. He was everybody's world. He was a father and a son and an uncle and a brother and a grandson. And he mattered.
Yeah.
God put him here. He mattered.
He still matters. He still matters.
He does still matter.
He still matters. And I will make sure that nobody forgets that.
I thank you for that, Eric. Eric, I like that name, Eric. I like that name, Eric.
Anything else you want to say before we wrap it up?
Just rest in peace, my baby. And I love you, and you're with your baby sister now. And I'll see you when I see you. On Jupiter. And I love you, Eric. And I'll try with the help of my friend Eric to make sure you're not forgotten.
Thanks for listening to True Consequences. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram at True Consequences Pod and on Twitter at True Cons Pod. True Consequences is listener supported. If you'd like to support this one-man show,
please go to patreon.com/trueconsequences. Thanks for listening, and stay safe, New Mexico.